Good afternoon. This is Judith Leacock from the Bookends Cafe. This is a part of a series of podcasts that we're doing for professional men and women who may perhaps be interested in how the world looks through two professional women's eyes who've actually had different experiences over the years, but a vast array of businesses and entities that we've had to deal with. And that's with my colleague, Kelly Lovely.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking today about what's that, volunteer and working with the aged. I mean, oh dear, that doesn't sound too good, does it? But anyway, we're going to make it interesting because we're going to explain a few things of our views of this particular topic. So first of all, let's look to Kelly. So what have you been up to in this area?
So, hello, thank you for that lovely introduction. That was very formal.
I know.
I was meant to bring some food for this one and I completely forgot.
And wine as well.
And wine. I had a wine, but I drank it last night, so that's, you know, missed out again. I will make it up to you.
Thank you.
I promise by this intellectual soliloquy that I'm about to embark upon. I've been very lucky in that in the last 6 months I've been working on boards in the not-for-profit NDIS sector. I'm an occupational therapist by trade, but it's been a long time since I've worked in corporate governance. So it staggers me to actually see how the not-for-profit sector and the National Disability Insurance Scheme is changing organisations which I guess used to be run on a shoestring by volunteers and certainly in a way that didn't inspire me with the need to break even or make money. It's overwhelming for me to see that even on the two not-for-profits that I work with, one's the independent community living where our members are dual diagnosis, either homeless or mentally challenged, and we provide housing for them. And the other is the Writing for the Disabled. It's a not-for-profit which actually deals with physical and intellectual disability and is perceived to be a sport. It makes me think about why people volunteer. I volunteer on both boards. For me, it's very much about how I was brought up, and it's certainly much about what you do when you've actually got skills, and it's about actually providing those skills to other people who don't skill. So for me, it's very altruistic. It's very much about sharing my skills to those who need help. But as I said, I'm overwhelmed by how intellectual our conversations are, how focused around money-making they are. And whilst my skills and my abilities sort of in that boardroom are well-received, it's not about me getting my hands dirty anymore. There's a lot of staff, paid staff, that run these businesses which are openly discussed about actually previously being run by volunteers. The volunteers that we have, they do tokenistic work. Is that your experience?
Oh, look, I think we're moving away from, unfortunately, this the whole idea of volunteering as an altruistic experience. And I think it's a combination of reasons. You've got the ageing population. If you look at something like Meals on Wheels, for example, which is a fantastic volunteer organisation, they do get a government subsidy. It's very small. But without the volunteers to deliver the meals, there would be no way that could run as a business. It would never be profitable. Yeah. It would never be able to cover its inherent costs. So, but they're all getting older. I mean, the lady who next door to my elderly mother has Meals on Wheels, the lady who delivers it is 89 years old.
Wow.
And she's been doing that for 10 years. So this is a generation that are going to disappear, that are not going to be there. And when you question the Gen X and Gen Ys about, you know, volunteering and, you know, it's a glazed over expression and it's not even in their vocabulary. It's not something that they consider. They will look at donating. They would donate to particular charities. And if you ask people, particularly Gen Xers and Gen Ys, they will tell you specific things that they feel committed to. But the word volunteering, no, that's not going to enter into the vocabulary. So who is going to do this when we no longer have the baby boomer generation around? Even baby boomers are not volunteering in the numbers that the generation before, the elderly, what we call the old, their generation, they did. It was an expected thing that they would do some volunteer work. But baby boomers are much more selective. And baby boomers, because they are so financially stable, will tend to donate rather than miss the money, donate time. Because what you've got now is a generation who look at lifestyle.
Yes.
Lifestyle is important. Holidays, you know, the golf, you know, the activities around what they haven't been able to do for the 50 years before, they're doing it now. So I think volunteering is an issue, and it's going to be an issue for a long time. And because there is no way any government of any country can afford to fund all the services that are currently done by volunteers.
which is a bit of a shame. I mean, you're a chief executive, chief operating officer in your own right. You've managed big business in health and aged care. Isn't it just nice sometimes having a volunteer sit and talk to someone because they're lonely? And who's doing this?
Well, absolutely. At the moment, there is a community visitor scheme, which we use very much in aged care for people who have no family or whose family are very distant for them and don't get visitors. And they're matched to a particular elder person and they will develop a relationship. But even then, they're in limited number. And again, remember, all of aged care reflects the community in which it serves. So you've got multicultural people, you don't have multicultural volunteers. Because, again, if you look at different cultures, volunteering isn't it's sort of an Anglo-Saxon thing. It isn't necessarily, you know, an Asian thing or another type of culture thing. It isn't necessarily something that they were brought up to do. So we do have a problem that we have a multicultural cohort in living in residential aged care. We don't necessarily have an appropriate volunteer connect that we can just say, you know, they can access. And look, I don't think it's going to get any better. I think it's going to only get harder because we've got an ageing population.
Because I know you I look at your mum. She's 93, she's at her 93rd birthday. She must, living on her own, feel lonely. She must want for volunteers or want for volunteering. And I know you're having to make some choices about how much longer she can stay living on her own, but it is devastating to think of those people who don't have access to just someone who's not rushing around making beds or rushing around doing the busy stuff. It's just sitting and actually trying to help curb loneliness.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I know watching my mother age over time, I mean, she's very fortunate. She's mobile. Yep. She can get herself to the local shops. But she is now experiencing what tends to happen in ageing. She is nervous. So she gets very nervous if anything changes. If there are people that she doesn't know around her, she still lives on her own. If there's uncertainty, she panics. Mm. So, yes, having the security of somebody, having a connect with someone like that would be really good for her. I mean, I act in that role, but it's very hard. I work as well, it's very hard. But, yeah, but for people who don't have family, just having a connect with someone who is outside them but is safe, which is what most old people really want. They want safety. They want to feel safe. When they come into residential aged care, a lot of them, that's the one thing they'll say. The first time they've slept soundly or they've relaxed because they feel safe.
Mm.
What we then need to add to is the psychological support of having that person, having a volunteer or having someone that can visit them if they don't have family or if they don't have a connect to their local community. That's the icing on the cake. Feeling safe as you age is really important, but feeling needed and wanted. Mm. And that one person visiting you can give you that feeling of they're coming to visit me.
Yep.
I'm needed by someone. You know, that does not change with age.
It's a real dilemma, isn't it? I mean, you're talking before about federal and state governments and all these. I know in my own experience, corporate governance requirement for the NDIS, it's very corporate.
Yes.
I'm surprised by how very corporate and how very focused around money-making an NFP actually is now. You mentioned before about, you know, people needing to feel safe, people needing to sort of not be nervous, but then, you know, there's an ageing workforce. I know from my experiencing with volunteering as a volunteer, there can be some real bullies amongst them. They can be some people who do awful things, you know, whether it be through the Cubs movement, the scouting movement, through the schools, through the Catholic Church. What is a subtle bully and why do they always belong in volunteer organisations?
Well, I think that's,
I'm generalising.
And this is just for, you know, example purposes. But you're talking about organisations where you have exposure to people and there's no authority to get rid of them. So if they get into a position like a coordinator of volunteers or something, there is no one who's going to actually monitor their behaviour and beat them over the head if they start, you know, being a bully.
Mm.
And the subtle signs, because they are very subtle. I mean, suddenly when your boss starts to become your best friend, right, that's actually a very subtle sign of bullying because they're trying to get into your realm, check you out, so they can make you do something that they want you to do. If you're starting to feel confused at work because you're getting different messages from this boss. So one minute, you know, he's your best friend, she's your best friend, next minute, not speaking to you. You have to keep your guard up because suddenly there's things being said or there's conversations going on and you seem to be either excluded or the target of it.
Mm.
So these things are not absolutely pointing at you, but they're subtle. So they, you know, you're made to feel uncomfortable, and you start to feel miserable at work. Yeah. Even if your work is volunteering, I'm using the word work as in, you know, a role that you play, whether it's a volunteer or a paid employee, you start to feel miserable because of these subtle changes in the person you report to who coordinates you. You need to do something about it because the cause is usually, as I said, these subtle changes in your boss, and they are bullying. They are examples mm-hmm. of bullying, and yeah. people don't know how to label it. They don't know what to do. So what do? They walk away. And yet a lot of these volunteers are there for, you know, for really lovely reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all they have as well. And yeah. remember, you're talking about a generation who possibly lost their partner, yeah. like my mum, you know.
Well, they've never worked.
She works with legacy ladies yeah. and they're all widows. Mm. So they don't have anybody else, and they have these groups yeah. and they do things. And to take that away from them simply because a bully was in there is terribly sad, and it's no good for them as an older person. Mm. So,
yeah,
they're subtle, but they're there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or you find that actually they're subtle and they're there and people stay and put up with it, which is just as bad.
Miserable for
just
them.
As bad, yeah. Just as bad. I actually had a really good experience with someone. I'm on another board, and it's a public sector board. It's under the EPA. So in Australia, that's the Environmental Protection Authority, and it's a radiation advisory board. And one of the doctors who are on that board said to me that he doesn't believe in volunteering. He believes that he's far too commercial. His skill sets are very privileged. He said, you know, state library privileged. He's obviously someone in his own right, very learned. His idea to bullying is just to actually be the best that he can be in the hospitals or in the schemes in which he works. And so that hospital, that scheme can trickle down jobs and actually can make money. So he doesn't have any mindset to volunteer at the school, at rugby, never going to do it. He believes that his value proposition is to actually only give people jobs. So that trickle-down sort of economics is very business, and I guess that's what's filtering into the corporatisation of looking after people.
Absolutely.
And what else have you been working on?
Well, I've been watching my mother, as I said, aging. And actually, the only thing I will say about that as well is that you really start to consider your own mortality when you see your parents aging.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's another piece that people forget as well. You are seeing what will happen to yourself, and you suddenly realise that, you know, you have that shorter number of years than you had.
So. And we might talk, I know you were talking before about happiness. I might put you on the spot next couple of podcasts. You were saying that you had a Harvard Business Review article about happiness.
Absolutely.
It's very much watching your parents age, a drag, a down of your own happiness.
Because you
can't.
Yeah.
Can't not be.
It's your mortality you're aware of.
Are you going to ask me what I've been reading?
Well, I was, but then I saw the pile of books. And I'm, oh, no, we're going to get a lecture.
Oh, no.
No. But they do look quite good. They've got good pictures on the covers, so that's good. All right, go for it, but limited.
I only want to tell you two books.
Oh,
the
good.
One book that I'm reading again, actually, if you've got any time on your hands, Dr. Tim Hawkins is the ex-principal of King's School in New South Wales. And he read 10 Conversations You Must Have With Your Son. As you know, you've got a son. I've got a couple of sons. There's 10 conversations, which I'm actually circling back and having again with the kids. And I'll read them out one by one. But, yeah, thoroughly recommend that everybody buys this book. It's a book that you're expected to read, but then also your son's expected to read. But certainly the conversation you have to have with your sons is that they are loved, that they have an identity, that there are certain values that a boy or a man needs to have. And there are certain leadership styles and leadership attributes. Remember, this is a private boys' school, so the leadership methods are very traditional, but nevertheless, they're nice to share. There's actually also a conversation about actually how boys need to still live in the family unit, the rules that need to put on with boys, because he talks openly about boys with, you know, the water sort of taking the path of least resistance. Boys would have to live at home for the rest of their life. So he is of the opinion that boys need to live together under your house, under your rules, as opposed to you as a mother still doing their clothes and making their beds when they're in their 30s. There's a conversation about achievement. There's a conversation to have about sex, money, health. And lastly, and we've talked about this in another podcast, about actual mental health and actually how to cope.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they're all really good topics, aren't they, for a conversation with anyone. But any child, whether they be female or male. But I think, the context about the sons is really important because boys do tend to react differently.
Yeah.
And of course, they mature much more slowly than their female counterparts.
Yeah. And the only other thing that I've been doing is actually listening to a TED Talk called Money Can't Buy Happiness by Michael Norton. It's a lovely TED Talk because I always dream, I know we both do, about winning the lottery and about actually having all this money so we never have to work again. It's actually a TED Talk about how money can actually buy you unhappiness. And the TED Talk, it's a really good one to watch, is actually following the activities of quite a few people who have actually won the lottery. And he openly talks about how money doesn't buy happiness, but certainly how you spend it makes you happy. So he talks about a lot of people who've won the lottery, have bought five cars, have blown it all on houses, and I suppose drunken debauchery. So if you spend your money on other people, even small trivial things or social things, it actually makes you happier. So if we do end up, winning the lottery, it's not making money or having money, it's how you spend it that actually makes you happy.
Well, you look at the, and oh, what's this gentleman's name, one of the richest men in the world.
Bill Gates?
No, Bill Gates. This is an older generation, so, you know, older than Bill Gates, the previous generation. And he was on TV once and he was asked about, you know, he's got billions and billions of dollars. And he said he has no concept of how much money he's got because he's busy spending it. And he's spending it on other people.
Yeah.
And he just sat there quietly. Nobody knows much about him.
Yeah.
He's very quiet about it and he doesn't advertise his bequests.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Gates has got his Bill Gates Foundation. Yeah. Everybody knows about it.
Yeah.
This chap, very quiet. But he said, why do I need all this money?
Yeah.
I don't need it. It will go to people who need it. And that's all he said. And I thought, well, and he was so happy and calm about it.
Mm.
I thought, well, that's what you want to see. That's, you know, and I can see that, that's why they're saying your happiness to share it, to actually.
And that's why you give. You know, you're a regular, you have a narrow number of charities, but I know you're very giving in actually how much and who.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I suppose to wrap it all up is it's nice to actually know that the NDIS and the not-for-profit space is coming. It will be much more, from my mind's eye, around actually people giving. Because you're actually wanting to give to make the business or the needs for that member of the community to be better. But not with time and probably not with the, you know, them pulling their own sort of sleeves up. It'll be a brand new world.
A brand new world.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Judith.
Nice. Yeah, thank you. And thank you for no wine and no food.
Adios, amigos. Bye.